This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we're covering Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, chapters 3 and 4, The Advance Guard, and number 12, Grim Old Place. In these chapters, Harry gets spirited away.
Harry is in quite a, we can talk about it in the next chapter, but he is,
he's in a way, yes,
in the next chapter, but, yep. But we got to get to there first, so.
Yep. Yeah. And then, yep, chapter 4 is the emergence of what the fandom likes to call Caps Lock Harry.
Oh, okay. I get it now. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. You finally understand.
I was like, I don't know. We can talk about it. I understand, but then I'm also like, everybody was in a difficult spot in that situation. Mm-hmm. So.
Yep. And so first let us begin with chapter 3. I've just been attacked by Dementors and I might be expelled from Hogwarts. I want to know what's going on and when I'm going to get out of here.
Yeah, he has not had a great time in this back at the Dursleys. It's all kind of blown up. I think that the last time we talked, it was like kind of just kind of chaos chapter a little bit there.
Yeah, complete chaos. And it's basically the same evening where he writes three copies of this letter that I just read, one for Sirius, one for Ron, and one for Hermione. And he's just pacing back and forth, waiting for Hedwig to come back from hunting. And she immediately shows, she shows up with a frog in her mouth.
Yeah. And then he's like being sassy to her to, get these letters out off and to basically force Ron and Hermione to write a like until they've got like one or two pages. And I was like, stop taking it out on Hedwig. Like, good Lord, she's an owl. She's the best. Stop it.
Yeah, she is awesome. And I'm just so cute of thinking of, just Hedwig, just making a gargled noise with her beak full of the toad or frog.
Yeah. Oh, it's kind of gross, but, whatever. It's Hedwig. Also she cute. Can do what she wants. Yes.
And immediately after he sends her off, he feels guilty for being a dick to her.
He kind of does that a lot. And so maybe lesson learned, like, don't be such a dick. But he apparently doesn't take that lesson to heart in the next chapter. So that's all right. Mm-hmm. But here, and then Hedwig doesn't show up right away.
For 3 days, which I'm kind of on Harry's side at this point. Because, again, attacked by Dementors, like, this is not a run-of-the-mill type of thing. Like, at the very least, Sirius should have had a letter the next morning saying, we're working on it, getting you out of there, just, we're working on it. Like, at that point, you need to give him something immediately. Yeah. to just go 3 whole days.
Yeah, and I guess I can kind of, if I put myself in the situation of, I guess I was empathizing more with the people that are trying to protect Harry than Harry, but I guess having been in Harry's shoes to kind of be like in the dark about all of this, you're just like, just tell me something. And I guess I'm kind of not quite clear, like, how much, can be revealed. Yeah, and it seems like nothing.
Yeah, and my argument is you don't have to reveal anything. Just Sirius has to say, right, we're working on it. Like, yeah. Every day, just say, we're working on it.
Dear Harry, we're working on it. Thank you. And then that's it. Yeah, it might have eased his nerves a little bit.
Yeah, so 3 whole days. Harry, I don't know if they locked him in his room the whole time, but, you know, every time Petunia drops him off food through the cat flap.
Yeah.
You know, goodness. He tries to inquire about the howler, but he was saying he might as well have been interrogated the doorknob for all the answers he got.
Yeah, they're not going to let it. Me. I'm just saying me because I'm the only one who doesn't know what the heck is going on with the howler there. But I am very curious, and I thought I was going to get that reveal sooner, but I'm not. So
Petunia is not giving anything away, you know. No. And finally, Uncle Vernon comes in, like, dressed in, like, one of his best suits, and it says, we're going out. And Harry's like, fine. You are not to leave your bedroom while we are away, okay? You are not to touch the television, the stereo, or any of our possessions, right? You are not to steal food from the fridge.
Oh, go ahead.
No, it's just, like, again, I should not expect better, but I do.
This is just like, yeah, you know, he says, I'm going to lock the door. You do that. And Uncle Vernon glared at Harry, clearly suspicious of his lack of argument. But I never got the impression Harry was really that argumentative. And I kind of was like, well, this is just kind of how they treat him all the time. And it made me wonder, like, is this rare that they leave the house very often? I mean, I don't know.
Well, if book one is anything to go by, it's rare for them to leave Harry alone in the house because they don't trust him to not blow shit up.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I just felt like if they're so worried about image, I feel like they would be like out and about, but maybe not. So
yeah, because in the pre-Hogwarts times, you know, they would dump him on Mrs. Fig, who could have made those visits a lot nicer.
Yeah. Definitely. I wish she would have. That would have been much more exciting and pleasant for Harry.
Yeah. And just not steal food from the fridge. I mean, like.
Because, like, you know, they're.
Because Harry is such a pig.
Fine. Right. Yeah. They're going to be fine. They can get. They're just being jerks, which is kind of their MO.
Yep. And so they leave and Harry hears a crash in the kitchen. So what did you think? Who did you think was coming?
Dobby. Of course. I was like, God, here we go again, Dobby. Like, figure it out. But yeah, I didn't. Or like maybe one of the cats from Miss Fig's house. I did not expect like this whole group of people to show up, especially not Moody and Lupin and like all these like great characters to show back up. So
yeah. So yeah, that's an interesting fanfic. What is like, Dobby has come to rescue Harry Potter.
I would be like, please, Dobby, stop. Like, you try, but like, let's just chill. Yeah.
Well, he did get it right with Harry with the gillyweed. That didn't kill Harry or injure him.
Right. Yes, he did kind of redeem himself. But still, it's like he kind of, you know, it's kind of well-meaning. And anyway, yeah, but that is exactly who I thought. I was like, oh, here we go again with Dobby. Sans the pudding, I guess, but.
Ooh, but it is not Dobby. It is this whole entourage. And so how did you feel about the first person we see of this posse is the real Mad-Eye?
I was really grateful because, you know, I said, like, I kind of wanted to know what that character was really like. And we don't really get a lot of him in this chapter, but we get enough. And I was kind of thought, like, the character that kind of showed up in the previous book, well, I would say was not extremely different. He's not as nervous, I don't think, but he seems a little more gruff thus far. But again, it's not like the best introduction. He's not fully formed quite yet.
Yep. And so first it's Moody talking to Harry, and then to reassure Harry is like, Lupin is like, it's all right, we've come to take you away. How about seeing Lupin again?
I was really happy about that because I mean, who doesn't love Professor Lupin? But yeah, I didn't know. I think I may have said, like, when I was reading this, I was like, this is one of the characters. I was like, I hope I see him again. And I do. And then we get Tonks, who is quite the quirky character for a wizard that's saying a lot. And we get some other characters too, but I'm not, you know, I'm sure they'll be important later, but they were names, you know, like I've said a million times, I'm familiar with some things from pop culture, but these were names that I was kind of like, I do not know any of these people. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've got Nymphadora Tonks, you know,
yes.
Yeah. Kind of a young witch in her 20s with purple hair.
Sweet.
We've got Mad-Eye, we've got Remus Lupin, we've got our first, like, directly, you know, stated, like, black wizard.
Okay, yes.
Kingsley Shacklebolt,
that's a pretty badass name, so.
It is a pretty badass name. And, Daedalus Diggle.
That's a silly name.
Well, I think he's one of them. I think he's the guy who kept bowing to Harry in the...
Oh, okay. Like, okay.
Yeah, so he's a bit excitable. And Emmeline Vance, Sturgis Podmore, and Hestia Jones, and Elpheus Doge.
Yeah. I know these people are going to show up again, and I will forget them, but I will try to remember.
Mm-hmm. And so... basically, they're going to leave soon, and Tonks goes up and is like, I'll help you pack, Harry. And Tonks is just like, they're very clean, aren't these muggles? Like, my dad's muggle-born, and he's a slob.
Yeah, and then he's like, well, they must be kind of, like, different, just like us. And I feel like I was like, okay, man, I get it, because I kind of feel like I've had the reaction to the wizards, like, oh, they're just like us. And it's like, well, they're kind of really trying to, Harry's really trying to reiterate that muggles, wizards, they're essentially all human.
It was just funny reading this, because my husband is very much like the Dursleys when it comes to cleanliness, and I'm more much like Tonks, where it needs to look a little lived in.
I'm right there with you. Yes.
Yeah, it's not a museum. It's where we live.
Right. Yeah. I like the coziness of that. I don't like to be a place where I feel like I can't touch anything. So.
Yeah. So, and Moody's just like, damn it. And is like, Potter, can you get me a glass of water? And instead of dumping his teeth in the water, he dumps his freaking eyeball.
Which, I mean, gross. Equally as gross. But I think he only just, like, hammers down the grossness with talking about how somebody else, what did he say, ever since, it keeps sticking, ever since that scum wore it. It's like, ew. That's so gross.
Yeah. So Tonks jumps up the stairs to Harry's room. And Harry's trying to gather things. And Tonks is looking in the mirror. And she's like, you know, I don't think purple's really my color. Do you think it makes me look a bit peaky? And Harry's just like,
Yeah, like, what's he going to say?
What does a 15-year-old boy know about fashion?
Right. Though then she turns her hair bubblegum pink, which I am so envious of that ability to change hair color like that.
So here we are introduced to a new, like, specific type of witch or wizard. A metamorph magus is someone who can shapeshift, like, you know, change their appearance at will. But this is different from an animagus, because metamorph magi, it's not about animals. They can only change their appearance still being, like, human.
Okay, so...
so it's like Mystique.
Okay, Mystique. I'm trying... okay. But so could, like, she change to look like Harry?
Yes,
or she could. Okay. I would hope that's probably highly regulated, because that seems very dangerous.
Well, it's not so much they can regulate it, because unlike animagi, which are, you know, is through rigorous training and crazy hopping on your foot at the full moon, whatever crap, you know, you're either born a metamorph magus or you're not.
Mm. Is there any way to, like, because, I mean, I guess it's kind of hard to do that. I'm just thinking this is kind of a great opportunity to get up to some trouble.
Yeah, no, you can't. Any other wizard who is not a metamorph magus has to rely on a wand or a potion to change their appearance like that. So again, they're extremely rare, and Tonks is one of them.
Cool. Well, it's kind of cool. I don't know.
Yep. and she helps Harry pack every, you know, cleans Hedwig's cage, and she's like, wow, a firebolt.
Yeah, she gets pretty psyched about that, and she's like, I only have, what does she have?
And I'm still riding a Comet 260, said Tonks Comet enviously.
Yes, yes.
And she's like, ah, well, one still in your jeans, both buttocks still on. Okay, let's go.
Yeah, that was some craziness with Mad-Eye Moody saying somebody has, like, blown their butt off or something, and they're like, really? Has that actually happened? So I liked his, like, emphasis on wand safety, so...
Indeed. And so they go back downstairs, and again, some of them are just fiddling around in the kitchen, and Hestia is laughing over a potato peeler.
It's kind of funny, I guess, when you think about it.
So Lupin's like, you know, we've left a letter telling your aunt and uncle that not to worry, they won't, that you're safe, that'll just depress them, and you'll see them next summer. Do I have to?
I have a feeling, I hope I'm right. I don't know if I'm right, but I have a feeling Harry might not be back at the Dursleys for a long time. But we'll see. I don't know. Maybe that's just wishful thinking.
Yep. And then Moody comes over and casts a disillusionment charm on Harry.
Very weird and interesting and... you know, because they couldn't do the, like, flu powder, because that was like those things were being tracked. So there's all these things to kind of hide him, and they couldn't use the invisibility cloak. So
Invisibility cloak would, like, blow off.
Right.
And
hold on, real time.
Yeah, he can't apparate. They're watching the flu networks. And again, Porky's are also highly regulated. So they can only physically travel. And the only way to do that with any speed is with brooms.
And, you know, whatever. That sounds like a great way to travel. I thought that was interesting about the Porky's, that they were highly regulated. And I felt like, well, especially after what happened in the last book.
And... mount your brooms, that's the first signal. Then we get all the exposition of Harry being like, oh, I'm free again, I'm flying. Like his Titanic, I'm king of the world.
Great movie. Can't watch that movie enough. I need to watch it. Anyway, sorry. That's like one of my favorites.
It is a good movie. Although I can't take Leonardo DiCaprio not seriously because he's just so young. He's such a baby.
I think this is like our age difference showing, because like he's kind of a little older than me, but not much. And so, but yeah, in that, I'll have to rewatch that. I love him so much, but I hate that he dates women that are half his age. It just grosses me out. Sorry. Like, I don't know. He just like kind of cycles through. Like, that just bothers me. So
don't, like, all consistent male celebrity, fine. Don't all male celebrities do that?
He just kind of, I don't know. He has an interesting pattern.
Notorious than others.
Yeah. It's like they turn 24 and he disposes for another 23. And it's kind of like, I don't know. I don't love that for him.
Leonardo DiCaprio aside, so they're, you know, go flying through the English countryside and swirling up and down, going through clouds, and... Moody wants to, like, double back to make sure they're not followed, and Tonks is like, fuck that shit.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because it's, like, super cold in this whole adventure.
Indeed. And then they finally land in London.
In London. That's exciting. And weird. Sorry, I was just looking at the art on the next page, which is really bothers me. London. Exciting.
Yep. And Moody rummages through his pockets, like, here, memorize these words. And right after Harry looks at it, Moody burns it. And the piece of parchment says, the headquarters of the Order of the Phoenix may be found at number 12, Grimald Place, London.
Yes.
And thus ends chapter 3, to go directly into chapter 4.
Yes. Yeah. With the... after Harry remembers, hopefully, the number 12 Grimald Place, London, they're kind of coming up on it, Grimald Place, but he can't see it.
Like, he's looked around, there's number 11, There's number 13, but there's no 12.
Right. Right.
And Lupin's just like, think about what you just read. And then the door magically appears.
Just reminds me of like a hidden, like a speakeasy or something.
Was it? It was as though an extra house had inflated, pushing those on either side out of its way. Harry gaped at it. The stereo number 11 thudded on. Apparently the muggles inside hadn't even felt anything. So the door has this big ass silver serpent knocker on it.
Appropriate. More snakes, right?
More snakes. They go inside, and he looked over his shoulder and saw the others filing behind him. Lupin Tonks carrying his trunk. You know, Harry felt as though something hot was trickling down his back, and he knew the delusement chart must have lifted. Okay, where's his description? He heard a soft hissing noise, and then old-fashioned gas lamps sputtered to life along the walls, casting a flickering, insubstantial light over the peeling wallpaper and threadbare carpet of a long, gloomy hallway where a cobwebby chandelier glimmered overhead and aged, blackened portraits hung crooked on the walls. How did you feel about this, about Grim Old Place?
It's pretty, pretty gothic, right?
Yeah.
Let's get some strong gothic vibes here. Yeah, you know, I was all fine with that until we get the heads on the wall. And then I kind of was like, ugh. But I liked it. I like the atmosphere thus far in this place, though I don't quite understand it yet. But
mm-hmm. Yes, all the the way we have a stag's head like mounted on a wall, like all these elf heads are like Buster mounted in the hallway.
No, I don't like that at all.
Yep. And then finally, Mrs. Weasley emerges.
Yeah, yeah, kind of like the last person I expected to see in a place like this. Just kind of. It seems very dark wizardy, and then Mrs. Weasley seems very, like, you know.
Love and light.
Yeah, yeah, she's very love and light. and then here she is. So, very interesting.
So, yeah, they're all gonna, the Order is apparently having a big meeting, but, again, also pretty tactless on the adults, like, again, they're smart enough to know that Harry is a ticking time bomb, and for Mrs. Weasley to just totally brush him off, you know, and just dump him, you know, at his room at this particular time, you know, not smart.
No, she's just kind of like, okay, we're going to have dinner later, but we got to go. Bye. And then it's like, okay, what the hell?
Yep. And then so she leaves Ron and Hermione to deal with Caps Lock Harry.
Caps Lock Harry. I love it. Yeah. And he is he's like, they are thrilled to see him, but he's just like a, you know, like a bottle waiting to explode.
Yeah. So, you know, Harry's like, you know, are you all right? Have you been furious with Fudge? I bet you have. I know our letters were useless. And so, and then Hedwig apparently, you know, as shitty as Harry was, she did obey his commands, and both Ron and Hermione have these huge scratches on their hands.
Poor Hedwig. That makes me feel even worse for her. She's just trying to do, you know, she's trying to help, and everybody's like, what'd she say? She's been in a right state, pecked us half to death when she brought your last letters. Look at this. So, I don't know. She was just trying to help.
He seemed to think it was best, Hermione said rather breathlessly. Dumbledore, I mean, right, said Harry. He noticed that her hands, too, bore the marks of Hedwig's beak and found that he was not at all sorry. I think Dang. He thought you were safest with the muggles, Ron began. Yeah? Have either of you been attacked by Dementors this summer?
Oh, here we go.
Okay, we don't. So, basically, how do you feel about Harry's feelings?
Oh, my God. Okay, so I have to admit, I listened to this chapter, so I just looked at the next page, and it is literally in caps. I didn't know that because I was listening to the audio. I feel like it was a little bit unfair for him. I understand his frustration, but I think that but Ron and Hermione were put in like this really tough place because I'm guessing it's all to protect their friend. And Hermione is a rule follower. She's not really one to kind of overstep. I don't know. I'm conflicted. This is just like a bad situation for everybody. I understand Harry's frustration. He's been isolated. The only thing he's had to think about is this. And then he had this encounter with the Dementors. And, you know, Ron and Hermione get to kind of live in this world that he wishes he was there. I don't know. I was very conflicted, and I knew you were going to ask me about this. And I knew that you were going to, like, I was going to be like, I just don't know how to feel about it. I feel, I wish this didn't have to happen, but I kind of feel like, I kind of know why you guys did what you did. And I can also understand Harry's frustration.
Yeah. So this is why people don't like this book, because they're very much, very anti, you know, caps lock Harry, and just at a superficial level think he's annoying or like mean, like to Ron and Hermione. But again, the kid has been traumatized and watched Cedric Diggory die.
It did turn me off to him a little bit, but it's also like, you gotta kind of put yourself in his shoes.
So he's got PTSD right now. Like, I agree with his feelings. But I think he should be screaming at the adults. He should not be screaming at Ron and Hermione.
Right. They're just kind of taking orders. And Dumbledore, too, is involved. So, mm-hmm. Right?
Like, he should he should be screaming at, like, Dumbledore or whoever. And I guess Harry's position is, at this point, Ron and Hermione, like, should have, like, the bonds of Golden Trio, you know, mischief. Should have superseded anything like screw what Dumbledore said.
This is kind of the place I came from. When you know something about somebody or something and you can't say anything because somebody else told you not to say anything. It's like that. I was like, oh my God, that's the feeling that they have right now. And that's awful. And it's just a hard situation. I don't know. Let's all have a little bit of empathy for everybody involved. Okay. That's what I ask everyone.
And throughout all this, Hermione is smart enough to validate Harry's feelings. And even it says, I don't know if here or a few pages later, it makes mention of like Hermione knew that if he goes on and on like this without any info, he's going to do something stupid. Like, you know, I think, you know, it's kind of implied that Hermione tried to convey that to the adults, you know, but still they overruled her.
Yeah, we talked about it in the past, like Hermione has some emotional intelligence that the other two don't usually have. So she was frustrated. And I mean, I don't know. I wish they could have like done a little code or something, but I don't know.
Yeah, who had to get past dragons and sphinxes and every other foul thing last year? Who saw him come back? Who had to escape from him? Me? Which again, I'm always Team Harry in this particular position because at this point it's too late to save him from, you know, preserve any innocence of his childhood. Like that ship sailed a long time ago.
Right. Yeah. And I think everybody's been in this spot where you just like stew on something and then it just kind of explodes and you're like, oh, sorry, I don't, you know.
Yep. And we get, what is this place? Headquarters for the Order of the Phoenix. Is anyone going to bother telling me what the Order of the Phoenix? It's a secret society. Dumbledore is in charge. He founded it. It's the people who fought against you-know-who last time.
Interesting. That's kind of information, but like I'm like, that's not really enough, like tell me more.
Yeah, and Harry basically thinks the same thing. Is like, Voldemort, what's happening? What's he up to? Where is he? What are we doing to stop him? And they're both like, we don't know. They don't let us in on the meetings. Like all we know is like bits and pieces that some are working on recruitment, some are like tailing known Death Eaters, like, and they always keep talking about guard duty.
Yeah. And Harry's and Ron's like, oh, well, maybe they met you. And he's like, well, maybe they did, you know, for Harry.
Yep. And he's like, what the hell have you two been doing if you're not in the meetings and you've been so busy? And Hermione says, we've been decontaminating this house. It's been empty for ages and stuff's been breeding in here. We've managed to clean out the kitchen, most of the bedrooms, and I think we're doing the drawing room tomorrow. And then she screams because poof, Fred and George have appeared.
And yeah, she's a little freaked out by that. But and Fred kind of calls him out, Harry out.
Yes, like, we thought we heard your dulcet tones. You don't want to bottle up your anger like that. Like, let it all out. There might be a couple of people 50 miles away who didn't hear you.
I'm good old Fred and George. They can always kind of ease the situation a little bit.
Yep. And so they can pop around everywhere because they are now technically 17 of age and have their apparition licenses.
Man, wouldn't that be nice? I'm more than 17, so I could apparate. That would be cool. Could do the podcast in real life together.
Yes, in person. And what do we got? You want to be careful if mom sees one of the extendable ears again. It's worth the risk. That's a major meeting they're having. And then we get Jenny.
Yeah, who's kind of like Jenny. I mean, I know she grows up, but I feel like in the past books, she's very much been a little girl. And here she's like, she's not. She is a person.
You know, in on the up and up. And she's just like, you know, don't bother with the extendable ears. Like, I've been chucking dung bombs at the door and nothing will penetrate it.
She's just like not the kind of what I remember her as, like this blushing, embarrassed, like seduced by Tom Riddle kind of like girl anymore. She just definitely seems like a character at this point. Like,
yes, substantially more fleshed out, come into her own.
Yeah.
And shame, I really fancied finding out what old Snape's been up to. Snape? Is he here? Yeah. Giving a report, top secret.
Yeah, Snape is still a mystery to me, and he shall remain so.
So, Bill, we find out, has returned, you know, he always worked for Gringotts, but he was, like, out in the field in Egypt breaking into tombs, but to help the Order, he has returned and took a desk job at Gringotts so he could be in England helping the Order, and we find out that he is dating Fleur Delacour.
Well, good for him. She sounds pretty charming. So, yeah, and they're giving him a bit of a hard time about that too. I mean, he's not there, but you know.
Yep. And Charlie is still in Romania, you know, trying to buff up some like foreign contacts and things. And Harry's just like, couldn't Percy do that? Because he worked in the Office of International Magical Cooperation. What did you think of Percy's development?
I was a little sad. I mean, I guess, you know, every family has their kind of black sheep, for lack of a better term. But Percy kind of always has this attitude that he's better than everybody, doesn't he? So he's, and that kind of, it sounds like, came to a head to the point where he kind of clashed with his father. And they're kind of on the outs a little bit.
Yeah. So Percy came home with a promotion, like junior, like assistant to the minister, like really high up, especially. And he wanted his dad to be so proud of him and happy for him. But Arthur wasn't. Arthur could see that, especially not only that Percy is so young, but especially in the context of the sort of, you know, inquiry with the Crouch stuff. And Percy didn't notice that anything was wrong.
Yeah.
And so, in essence, Arthur, don't know how well or how badly he worded this, but basically, you know, said that this is probably about wanting to spy on the whole Weasley family and by extension Dumbledore, because Fudge, you know, it's basically said dad says anyone who's been is still like buddy buddy with Dumbledore can just clear their desk. And so so Percy got really mad that Arthur and, you know, everyone wasn't happy for him and said that he's always had to fight Arthur's lousy reputation and that he's had no ambition. And that's why they've always been poor.
That's such that made me very sad because that's just not the way the world works people.
In as the years have gone by, like me thinking about Percy, like, I don't know why. Like, not that I'm, like, Team Percy in this, like, in this argument. Obviously, he's going way too far. But I can't help but think, like, there are certain articles I've read about, you know, people of color who come from certain communities. I remember, like, you know, and if you do anything to, like, try and better yourself, whether it's, like, doing well in school, like, basically others in your community will accuse you of, like, trying to be white.
Mm.
And I especially remember it coming in the context of, like, specifically a Native American, like, writer who was, again, trying to do well in school and, like, trying to, you know, better himself, and that his peers did not look favorably upon that. So, like, I think to a certain extent with Percy, it's like, you know, he wants to do better for himself, and he's always kind of been, his siblings have not been the most gracious or supportive of that, and Percy has never done anything to, like, help his case because he's been so snooty and, you know, snobby about it.
Right.
You know, there is, in itself, there is nothing wrong with wanting to, like, be the straight-laced and, like, you know, work in a government position and, like, work your way up. Like, in itself, there's nothing wrong with that. But, so, yeah, I just find it interesting. And it's also ties into, like, you know, I can't know with certainty, like, with Arthur, like, how much of his, you know, again, his certain, like, career and his financial situation, how much of that was in his control and how much wasn't, in terms of, like, is Arthur Weasley kind of being like a Ned Stark where he's not willing to play the game even a little bit? Because you can say, yes, that's noble in the one sense to not give up your principles, but at the same time, your family financially suffers because of it. So is that noble to right. let your family suffer so that you, quote unquote, don't metaphorically have to get your hands dirty?
I think it's like we don't know what Arthur's, you know, why they're poor. I think it's just like a sore spot for the Weasley family, obviously, because it's brought up very often, you know, and Percy mm-hmm. trying to make a better life for himself, like, you know, good for him. There are a lot of people, I think I've read some books about people that do that and their family kind of rejects it. I don't know if I get the impression that the, like, Weasley family would think less of him for making money and being successful. It's just his, like, attitude and demeanor that's just so, like, I'm better than everybody. And that's very...
so pompous and...
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's basically, Molly more or less implies at the end of book four that Arthur hasn't been able to go up in the ministry because of his, like, favorable opinion and, like, pro-Muggle stances. That even though people aren't running around like Voldemort being wizard Hitler and being super racist like that, but still being that pro-Muggle has had sociopolitical consequences for Arthur's career.
That's very interesting. I was trying to think about, like, the how it would be applied in, like, the Muggle world. I can't think of it.
But yeah, like, Percy, like, you know, we weren't there in the fight, you know, but again, just not a... could Arthur have breached this up subject in any way where Percy would have heard it? Like, is there any way he could have phrased it delicately enough that Percy's ego would not have been bruised?
That is a good question, because I'll tell you, know, like, you know, close friends and family really know how to, like, dig the knife in. So God knows what was said during that argument.
Yeah. So in essence, yeah, Percy's like, Harry Potter's word isn't good enough and I'm with the ministry and screw all of you. And even, you know, he's now living by himself in London.
Yeah. I don't know. Percy, I know that's probably going to come up later, but obviously Molly Weasley's pretty upset about it.
Yeah. She tried to go visit him and he slammed the door in her face.
The family drama. That is, I'm not here for that. I'm here for the wizard drama. Come on. But
yeah. And so this ties into, why does Percy think Harry's word isn't good enough? It's because the Daily Prophet has been building on what Rita Skeeter started and is trying to portray Harry as, how did I phrase it in my notes, as like this fallen child celebrity who has finally let the fame go to his head and is now like trying to pretend he's relevant again by trying to say that Voldemort is back, because
like what if and so Hermione gets a little like you know, well, haven't you been reading the newspaper? And he's like, not cover to cover. And it's like, oh, well, not being real nice to you in this, you know, in the newspaper. You're a standing joke, which, so they're saying all these nasty stuff, all this nasty stuff about him.
I don't know. I just had a very, you know, just could relate to Harry's being like, I don't want anyone to worship, like, you know, everyone around him saying like, we know you don't, but still feeling like, you know, just incensed that people are trying to like say that about you and you want to defend yourself, but these aren't the people you need to defend yourself against.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It also sounds like this like news organization needs some help. It's like, I don't know. They're just doing it for the clicks at this point.
Yeah. Doing for clickbait. And, you know, Hermione says, you know, they haven't reported about the Dementors, which is surprising. I think they're waiting until they can say they've expelled you. I mean, if they expel you.
Yeah, there's that whole thing hanging over Harry's head as well, is the his like little trial coming up.
Yep. And then finally, Mrs. Weasley comes along. She's like, the meeting's over. You can come down and have dinner. And who's left all the dung bombs outside the door? Crookshank, said Ginny unblushingly. He loves playing with them. Which, after, you know, she has been the one who has been, like, chucking
dung bombs
at the door. So we just get a little tidbit. You know, we don't, obviously, get this from Harry's perspective, but we kind of get these snippets of, you know, we see Ginny. My headcanon has always been that Ginny is far closer and is more like mischievous, like Fred and George, than she's ever been, you know, she's never been as close with Ron, even though Ron is closer to her in age.
Yeah, that would make, sometimes that kind of relationship can be kind of strained, brothers and sister. I don't know. I have a brother, so I know how that is, but.
Or at least maybe the closer you are, the more strained it is, because.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it can just be weird at certain times in life. I don't have my brother and I are fine, so I'll just put that out there. Yeah, so there's still not a lot of information about what the Order of the Phoenix is quite yet. I mean, I know the next chapter is called the Order of the Phoenix, so like I'll be all right. But I'm putting myself in Harry's shoes. And then we talk about a house elf creature. Is that his name? I forgot.
Creature.
All right.
So he is the house elf that lives here. And his greatest ambition is to have his, like, head mounted on the wall like his mother.
I don't like that. Like, I don't, like, if you, I don't have animal heads in, like, elk heads or whatever. Like, I guess, I don't understand this quite yet. To me, it's just very weird. So, yeah.
It's stupid patriarchy of trying to say, look, I'm such a badass that if zombie apocalypse comes, I can hunt.
Yeah. That's how I feel about it too.
Yeah, remember that whole brouhaha of like that dentist whose like career was like basically completely ruined because he like shot and killed a lion in Africa?
I typically wear a hoodie that says "Arm the Animals" and it's a little bunny rabbit on a tank. So I have some strong feelings about this. I don't know if you've seen the full thing. It's like, it is. It's just a little bunny on a tank. So I have some pretty strong feelings about that. And this is just such a weird thing to like put in this story. And I'm like, is it to make that equivalent to like animal hunting? But these are, I think it's just my understanding of the house elves, and it's just very confusing.
It's not the exact same, because the house elves are like, you know, these indentured servants, not so much something that one hunts. It's not like it's a dragon's head or whatever.
Yeah, this is weird.
My husband and I, our first date was at Irish pub known as the Irish Lion, which used to be a brothel, and it said it can be haunted by some prostitutes. But anyway, that's beside the point. The point is that, you know, we love it. You know, it's one of our favorite restaurants, with the exception of lots of these, like, you know, deer and elk heads. And I'm just like, please, no.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Even more so, because, as you know, I've gone pescatarian and I'm, you know, I'm barely I'm to the point where I can't even tolerate how we treat domestic animals for food, let alone going out and inflicting more pain on wild animals.
Right. Yeah. It's I'm so bad. I'm holding myself back. So I'm just like, I'm trying to stick to the thing. It just seems like for this story specifically, like, it just seems very kind of horror-y. Like, it's just strange because there are enough, like, it's just weird. I don't like it. It's weird. No thanks. Yeah.
So, house elf heads aside, so they kind of go mingle on downstairs and, you know, they've all, like Molly Weasley says, like, tried to, like, be quiet, like, in the hallway. Like, the kitchen is back here. Try and be quiet. But we learn Tonks is a bit of a klutz and she trips over the troll leg umbrella stand.
Which, again, weird. We have a freaking troll leg stand. It's like, what are we doing? Like, which I know they used to make, like, probably somewhere, elephant-like feet, like, for tables. Anyway, disgusting. Yeah.
Speaking of elephants, like, they've been hunted so much for their ivory that evolution has now made tuskless elephants.
I didn't know that. That's tragic.
Yeah, so basically now there's a subset that literally do not have tusks.
Well, I guess that's sad. But if they can still survive that way, at least maybe they won't get poached. So that's good.
Well, that's the idea that they were left alone because they don't have the tusks.
Good. I hope so. I mean, anyway, I'm just laughing at my head is spinning with all this animal stuff that I've read for the past several years. Okay. So Tonks has fallen over but we still don't really know why it's like, be quiet.
Well, we know it's fine. We finally realize it's be quiet because her tripping over like triggers this portrait of an old woman just screaming bloody murder as if she's being tortured.
Yes, and that is, we find out whose mother that is.
Like, she's screaming, like, filth, scum, byproducts of dirt and vileness, half-breeds, be gone from this place, how dare you befoul the house of my fathers. And finally, of all people, Sirius shows up.
And then he's, like, yelling back, and, what does he say?
He's able to force the curtain close again. The old woman's screeches died and an echoing silence fell. Panting slightly and sweeping his long dark hair out of his eyes, Harry's godfather, Sirius, turned to face him. "Hello, Harry," he said grimly. "I see you've met my mother."
And then I don't get to read anymore until, like, we record. So that was a pretty crazy ending and very interesting.
Mm-hmm. And thus concludes chapter 4, number 12, Grim Old Place. Not at all a pun on words, play on words. For Grim Old Place.
Oh, I didn't put that together, but now I know.
Alrighty then, do I even need to ask in terms of gothic geek out?
I mean, the Grim Old Place, right? That was that is the gothic place. So much, you know, it upon is, entry.
To me, it's like the gothic, most gothic place because it is the quintessential, like, haunted house. Because even by wizarding standards, like, obviously they're not ghosts, but even Molly's like, I don't want to wake up anything.
Right. So even the wizards are, what is it? It reminded me of the Shrieking Shack, but like, yeah, but gothic-y.
Yeah-ish. Yeah. It's just, I think of Grim Old Place as more gothic just because, as you can see, it is this old, like, manor house.
Yeah, this definitely, I totally agree. This is, like, makes me think
like,
of
literally, like cobweb-ridden chandelier.
Right.
And gas lamps on the wall.
Yes, it gives very, like, where the Shrieking Shack gave very haunted house, like I was gonna say vibes, haunted house vibes, which is a little bit more like, you know, less gothic, more horror, but still a little gothic. This is definitely traditional gothic that Amy and I spent a long time kind of talking about and dissecting. So
yes, and specifically with all this stuff, the portrait of Well, again, we know it's Sirius's mother, and I don't mind saying that her name is Walburga Black.
Oh, okay.
So just this sense of a portrait of an ancestor, Castle of Otranto.
Yes. Know, yes. Yeah.
Causing lots of mayhem and problems.
Yes, very true. Very, very true. So it sounds like we both agree that that's the Gothic geek out point for these two chapters. I couldn't think of anything that would be, I mean, at the Dursleys, nothing. Just, no, you know,
in the whole series, this is the top three, if not one of the most, depending on which categories in our criteria you emphasize and prioritize. Because taking away Hogwarts with all the castle stuff, outside of Hogwarts, Grimmauld Place is it.
Yeah. Cool. I feel like we're going to be there for a little bit. So I will learn more.
Yes, we shall learn much, much more. All right. Yep. Short and sweet. Very obvious. And now we can move on to Tarot of the Day, which the card I pulled out at random was the Nine of Swords.
All right.
Not a happy card.
No.
Nine of Swords. Nine of Swords suggests that dark thoughts and disturbing feelings are weighing you down and keeping you up at night. You are worrying excessively about a situation and your negative thoughts are getting the better of you, leaving you stressed and anxious. The more you associate with your fears, the more they will rule your life. As you obsess over what's not working, the more anxious you become and the more you will worry. It becomes a negative cycle where one awful thing leads to another and another and another until they overwhelm you.
So I was like, did you pull this card for me? This is so obviously Harry's card, but.
Yes, this is totally Harry's ethos, the vibe he's giving right now, because he's stressing about the hearing. He's stressing that his friends aren't, properly informing him. He's stressed out that no one wants to tell him anything, and it's just all compounding, and he gets some of it out, but he still has the hearing to think about. And was it, be careful, because the fear and worry in the Nine of Swords can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. As you obsess over what may go wrong, you're more likely to manifest your worst case scenario because you are inadvertently acting in ways that support your negative thoughts. I am a victim of self-fulfilling prophecies. It's some people have a point in terms of all in New Age spirituality, how sometimes unhealthy and victim blaming, the law of attraction sort of rhetoric can be, to a certain extent. But overall, I am the point that if you conduct yourself in a certain way or always think of the worst case scenario, that's what you're also kind of going to bring. Some things are totally outside your control. But again, it's not even just the energies. It's like when I would be in the Middle East, and if I could walk with confidence and I know where I'm going, less people will give me problems. But if I'm in a new area and I'm a foreigner and I clearly look vulnerable, guys are going to give me shit, and they can just sense that.
Wow. Yeah.
Like sharks.
Yeah, I don't. I can relate to that. That's kind of I kind of have a tendency to have that kind of mind, which is not good. But I think with Harry to apply it to him, and especially when he's sitting and kind of stewing and basically sicking Hedwig on his friends, he's coming from a very Nine of Swords place.
Yes, he is. And overall, just general sentiment of Nine of Swords kind of. That tends to be more of Hermione's, personality, just that level of anxiousness. And, to a lesser degree, I can see her, thinking, oh, I know, I want to see Harry, but I know Harry's going to be so pissed off because I know Harry, he's going to be so mad, and we're going to get the brunt of it, and, just.
Right. That's very true. Man.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think, is anyone else spiraling out of control like Harry with Nine of Swords?
Could we argue maybe a little bit, without knowing too much, for me, Percy kind of in that situation? I mean, not knowing fully the details, but definitely from the perspective we've been given thus far, it seems like he could
kind of
relate to that.
Yeah, because he's anxious. Anxieties come from, like, insecurities because he just wants to prove that he's good at this job and that he's going high in the ministry of his own merits, not that anyone, his family or the ministry or anyone else, has any specific, you know, agenda beyond how awesome he is.
Right.
And what is, oh, Gyro's opening the door.
Aw. I don't know if I've ever seen Gyro. I probably have seen a picture.
Here, let me just close the door one moment.
Okay.
You can stay, Gyro, if you're quiet. Alrighty then. So then the card I pulled up among the Black Astrology tarot cards was card number 31, which is the seventh house.
Okay.
So the seventh house is the area of the chart that represents the other, since it is opposed to the first house of the self. Traditionally, it has been thought to be the house of marriage and marriage partners. And although this may still be the primary meaning, the other can also indicate friends and family and peer groups. So it can mean significant others such as co-workers. Since it is the traditional house of Libra, it governs fairness, balance, and the law. It's also the house of open enemies. When the seventh house presents itself in a reading, it usually means one of two things, either issues dealing with partners or significant others, or court cases and legal issues.
Hmm, that's pretty on the nose there.
So, tell me more.
That's, gosh, I was going to say marriage is like that, because it kind of talked a little bit about that, the house of other, but court cases obviously is like, that's what Harry's kind of, we didn't really kind of talk too much about that in these chapters, but that's obviously the thing that's on his mind a little bit, his possible expulsion from Hogwarts, which is not going to happen, but he doesn't know that yet.
Yeah. So yeah, the court cases, and then again, not the other. So like specifically how we define ourselves in relationship to others. And so not specifically in romantic relationship, but Harry coming into a head with his, you know, kind of redefining, for lack of a better word, you know, the relationships that he has with Ron and Hermione, and him like assessing, like, are they, you know, quote unquote trustworthy, or are they truly loyal? Or, and again, in Harry's mind, he doesn't think Dumbledore saying no should have stopped Ron and Hermione from doing something.
Right. I wonder if like this situation was reversed, how Harry would kind of approach that, but I don't know.
I don't know. Like, I think if it was Harry, I think Harry would have resorted to some sort of code, hoping for Ron and Hermione to get it.
Yeah. 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 I could see that.
Yeah. So let's see what else we got. If the card is referring to a court case, legal issue, it's not a good time for that. The end result may not be what you hope for. Can also imply getting ready for a more serious relationship. In the case of dysfunctional or unhealthy relationships, you can look to surrounding cards to see how they will fare in the near future. So, yeah. Overall, the idea of like interpersonal relationships and legal cases, which I know nothing of like the 12 houses, you know, and all of that jazz, but I am surprised about how well that meshed together.
Always. I feel like they have both applied very well. And, you know, the interpersonal relationships, the tension between Ron, Hermione, and Harry, which is very much Harry creating that tension. I feel like Ron and Hermione are kind of like, we didn't know what, nobody can see me gesturing, so I should say what I'm saying. They're like, they didn't know what to do. So
yeah, well, and as I said, Harry should be screaming at the adults. At this point, Ron and Hermione are just the proxies because, you know, don't shoot the messenger, because they're just following the orders of what the adults are telling them. And Harry's just like, fuck that shit.
Right, exactly.
Alrighty then, and now we move on to our last exercise, which is fanfiction time.
Ooh, I feel like, well, I just kind of asked, what if they had shared the information with Harry? Like, what if they did what Harry wanted them to do, and they did write these long detailed letters, and they're like, this is what's happening. And, you know, I feel like they put him at very high risk. He would have been probably happy to be in the loop, quote unquote. But yeah,
I don't think it's not so much how it would have affected him. Like, yeah, he would have been happy to get some details. Yeah, I feel like would have any information have, you know, appeased him at that point, because he just would be constantly asking, like, okay, when am I getting out of here? When am I getting out of here? Like, you know, would that have fulfilled, sated his curiosity? And I'm starting to think maybe not necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like they kind of got the brunt of a lot of frustration that might not have of everything to do with that situation, maybe.
Yeah,
too.
Like, yeah, because also, yeah, just the general being, like, again, Dumbledore sending Harry back to the Dursleys after such a traumatic event without even a concrete, this is why you have to. Not a very smart move.
No, definitely not the most empathetic choice on Dumbledore's part. But
mm-hmm. Yeah. So mine was, you know, Moody was all paranoid, like, if one of us dies, don't break formation, keep going. So mine was, what if they had been intercepted?
Oh, man.
What if there was this huge ass Death Eater battle in the sky?
That would have been exciting. It would have been very early on for the story, but it would have been exciting. I mean, shoot, like the Dementors showing up, it was pretty big for that early on in the story, which usually kind of takes it pretty slow, with the exception of the Goblet of Fire, which started with the Riddle House. So, that would have been exciting. Maybe would Harry have made it? Probably, I guess. I mean, we kind of had to, but I bet they would have lost some of those, some people on the way.
Ugh. Yeah. That's all I really could come up with. I also was like just thinking, what if the headquarters was somewhere else?
Yeah, you know, it'd be cool.
Like, you know, we don't have very much detail yet. We'll get in the next chapter of why.
Okay.
The headquarters is specifically number 12 Grimmauld Place, because not that I'm really spoiling anything, because that wasn't the headquarters like back in the 70s, like the last time Voldemort was, you know, power.
It would make sense that would change, and that obviously that it's concealed. But what if it was someplace like where Durmstrang, right? That was the where Crumb was from. That would... Do you think it would that be a possibility that would be that far away?
Well, they're so focused on the dark arts, but again, Grimmauld Place is pretty dark too. So I it would still have to be in England, like it would to be like feasible, because it's, yeah, I'm just thinking, like, you know, what other wizarding manor houses are there? I don't know.
You should put it in Paris. That would be fun. I mean, it's still, I mean, it's not super far away and be a little bit like, I don't know.
Alrighty then, and thus concludes this episode of The Rambling Raven Pups. Tune in next time for next week. We are going to go into chapters 5 and 6, The Order of the Phoenix and the Noble and Most Ancient House of Black.
Whoa. All right.
Yeah, so some serious background.
Cool.
Both as a noun, as an adjective, some serious background on Sirius Black.
Yes.
Okay, catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Rambling Raven Pups. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophie Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophie Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophieMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophie Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophieMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophie Mare Studios podcast.